be blue, 'cause I can't see you. Richie, I love you.
Hello, this is Richie Wexler from Vintage Annals Archive, Outsider Podcast. I'm very happy to have Ashley Wool from How to Dance in Ohio. I'm not going to say much more except you're going to really enjoy this episode. Ashley is really smart and loves theater and can speak really eloquently about the theater and can speak eloquently about what it's like to be autistic and how those worlds work together. And it was really an honor and privilege to speak to them. Here you go. Enjoy. You know, you as a fan of Broadway, what were some early musicals? Or, I know you also do music, so I can open this up to music as well. But were there certain theatrical music or musicals that really turned you on to this path when you were younger? Or whatever.
It really started when I was extremely young, because my dad began his career in education as an English teacher.
Nice.
And he was a middle school English teacher in Mount Vernon, New York. And that middle school had a beautiful auditorium that was kept locked all year. And the only times they used it were for like convocation. And he said, well, what the heck? We've got this beautiful space.
Yeah.
We should do something in it. So he started to, he had like a bit of a background in theater from his college studies. His literature studies. So he started staging productions and working with other theater people in the area who were like more specifically versed in that stuff. And ultimately, the students, he would make it like a year-long project where the students would write pieces that got turned into an original play.
Wow.
And an original musical. And when I was really little, every now and then I'd go down there and I'd sit in on a rehearsal and I'd watch it. And I just have very vivid memories of like the smells of the theater and it just felt like a very sacred space, almost like being in a church. But, and my dad said, it's a cathedral of the mind. That was what he always used to say.
Nice.
And I would watch the rehearsals and I would watch the scenes. And I remember there was this one particular scene in a play that they did that was kind of Into the Woods adjacent. Like there were fairy tales involved, but they were kind of disrupted versions of the fairy tales.
Okay.
And a little more simple. But there was a scene that was very intense and very sad. And it was one that I was sitting in on at the age of maybe 5 or 6.
Holy crap.
And I remember watching it and watching the actress kind of break down on stage. And then they stopped the scene and everything was okay. And then they talked about it and then they did it again. And I thought, that's the coolest thing ever. I just, something really clicked with me about the magic of that, because, you know, in real life, you don't get to process things like that. You don't get to act stuff out, feel your feelings, and then step back from them and talk about them and do them again. And it felt like I was watching a very elaborate game of make-believe, but for adults.
Nice.
And I think it wasn't really until I got a little bit older and I started working with a musical theater program in my hometown.
And where are you from again?
I'm from Westchester County originally. I grew up in Yorktown.
Yorktown, that's New York or?
Yeah, where? New York.
Okay, nice.
Northernmost tip of Westchester. So there was a children's musical theater group right in my hometown, and I worked with them for a few years, and I saw I saw a few Broadway shows with them. The first one that I ever saw was Beauty and the Beast.
Nice.
And it was a matinee, and we had a little talk back after the show with two of the actors. What the heck was her name? I always forget her name. Beth somebody who was playing Mrs. Potts. I can't remember her last name. I found
Okay.
it. I went and found it on IMDb because I was like, I remember this woman so clearly, and she did the Guys and Dolls National Tour, and she was so talented and so gracious with
Nice.
her time. But you know, we were talking about kind of like the process and the behind the scenes, and of course, we all, you know, being kids, we all wanted to know how the technical spectacle happened. Like, how was the beast transformation happen? How did the scene changes happen? And they just kept saying, oh, you know, Disney magic. Disney magic, Disney magic. And then one of the kids,
Great answer.
one of this well, one of the kids, Harrison, he was a good friend of mine. He suddenly said, look, we're all old enough to know it's not actually magic. How come you're not allowed to tell us?
Okay.
And Beth said, well, at the end of the day, it all kind of boils down to money, because these are proprietary secrets that were created for this show. And if we tell people how it's done, we could get in trouble, because then those ideas could be used other places and Disney would be
Right.
protective of them. And I just remember that answer and her talking about it. You know, I was a kid. I didn't have any concept of money. You know, my parents were, you know, did decently financially, and it wasn't something I had ever thought about. And that was when it first kind of dawned on me that, oh, this is a job. This is a
Okay.
job and a business, and people do it for a living. And
Yeah.
there's all kinds of stuff that goes on the other side of the magic. And
Okay.
that didn't turn me off to it. It actually just intrigued me more. And I wanted to learn more about
Okay.
how to make this happen. So, yeah, I guess it was just a combination of having those formative experiences of just seeing every side of it.
Tell me about the music you made as a 7-year-old, because I feel like.
Yeah, no, the songwriting just kind of, I think it actually sort of emerged from my theatrical instincts. Because I can't remember how I got this idea in my head. I think I saw something in a book that like triggered a vision in my head of this Halloween costume that I wanted to do. It was like, I want to be a butterfly rock star. I want to be a rock star that has this butterfly costume that has hearts all over it, and just be
Awesome.
like a love heart butterfly rock star. And my mom, who like made all our costumes when I was little, was like, okay, we'll mild you in that costume, whatever. And in my mind, I felt like if I was a rock star, I had to have my own songs. So I was like, let me start writing some songs that I think fit this character, this idea. And that way I'll have something more interesting to do than just say trick or treat at people's houses.
It's a little rock opera while I'm doing this for you.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it really did just emerge as kind of the result of that theatrical instinct and that character and world building instinct. And then as I got older and I started to kind of understand singer songwriters a little bit more,
Who are some of
I
those that maybe made an influence on you, if I can ask?
the biggest one I'm going to say is Hanson,
I
because
saw that, yes.
Hanson
Nice.
hit the music scene in 1997. I was 10 years old. And to see kids, like literal children, not much older than me, who were traveling the world performing music that they had written, and people really took to it, and it was good.
Yeah,
And it just
they're
kind of,
huge.
it kind of, it kind of, it made such an impression on me, because then I saw them in interviews and they didn't seem all that cool. They just seemed like normal, like goofy
Right.
kids
Goofy.
that like
Yeah,
people that
okay.
I would hang out with. And I thought, well, gee, you know, if they can do it, why not me? Like, why do I, you know, I don't have to wait until I get braces or, you know, get boobs. Like, I don't have to be cool to do this. Like,
Yeah.
I can just start. I can just do it.
I want to take a few minutes and just talk about your music career. I'm wondering if And I just want to get into some, maybe take about 5 minutes and just talk about your music stuff. I know you I
Yeah,
did
no,
some things about
absolutely.
the song Auto.
Automatronic. I can't believe you're looking into this. No, those are the singles that I released in 2020, and I expected to be able to do more with them, but 2020 was 2020.
Yeah.
And then, How to Dance in Ohio happens, and I kind of got sucked into that. And well, not sucked in, I knew what I signed
Right.
up for, but
They took me from my house, made me
the
perform in a
songwriting
musical. Sorry.
aspect, just kind of what it ultimately turned into was a way for me to be creative without having to play a part or put myself into a
Gotcha.
box.
So it's like
Because
anti-theater versus connected to theater.
no, not anti-theater, just
But
like
it's
anti-typecasting.
type. I got you.
Because
Interesting.
when I started to really learn more about the business and learn more about how stuff worked, I had it in my head that, oh, I could play any part. I could be anything. I could be anybody. And they were like, well, you're 5'1" and you have a baby face, and you're gonna get typecast as like the Wednesday Addams, the little Sally in You're in Town, like those kinds of roles. And I was
Yeah.
like, that's all well and good, but that's not all that I am.
Of course.
So until I'm like, I'm older and I'm able to better approach like other roles and other things, like whatever I can't do the in theater, I'm gonna do in my own music.
That's awesome. I did some research on some of the parts you had before. I kind of skipped over the serious stuff, but you do, I think with Ava Perone, right? You did
I
people.
did, yeah.
It seems like just from being in Little Shop and Xanadu and Addams Family and Rocky Horror that I'm wondering if you enjoy a certain bit of camp and humor,
Oh,
and do you feel like
yes.
so that was my focus. Although I am, I just because of time, I'm just going that route. But
No,
yeah,
that's fine. I get it.
tell me about like you as a comedian. Do you feel like you are? What draws you to the camp? What draws you to the over the topness?
I think a lot of my attraction to that style of performance and that style of art was formed in my early childhood, because I was a child of the 90s and we had cartoons like Animaniacs
Oh
and
yeah.
all the early Nickelodeon cartoons, Rugrats, Rocko's Modern Life, I was a big fan of. In fact, there was one particular episode of Rocko's Modern Life, which I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
Little
there
bit.
was an Earth Day themed musical episode that came out one
Oh
time. And I my two favorite things were saving the
wow.
environment and musicals.
Gotcha.
And that episode lampooned both of those things brilliantly, but
Well,
also had like a serious underlying environmental message, but it was funny. It wasn't preachy. It was very entertaining and it really caught on. And people in my millennial generation, we know that song. We know who Captain Compost Heap is, even though he only appeared in one episode of the show. It's like
nice.
they had instead of like Smokey the Bear, they had Captain Compost Heap like as their mascot for the show.
Okay.
And that really spoke to me, because I think as an autistic person, I was always very earnest in everything that I said and everything that I did. And there was a point in which, like, I knew it was coming across preachy and I knew it was coming across know-it-all, but I didn't know how to do it any other way. And something in those cartoons made things click for me. Like, oh, I can deliver these messages, but I don't have to be annoying about it. I can make it entertaining. I can make it fun.
Course.
And I think Xanadu is actually a great example of that. Xanadu is a very silly show. It's based on a movie
Roller
that's,
skates. Roller
yes,
skates.
but the heart of the show, the heart of the musical, and I think in some ways the heart of the film too, but it was really more driven home in the musical version, is that art is important to the human condition. It's critically important to the human condition. Art
Right.
and loving other people and creating community with people through art is crucially important to the human condition, no matter what the art is, no matter what it looks like, no matter what
I
it's
high
based
five.
on. What
Yeah.
matters is, creating something that brings people together. And that, to me, is what sets that particular role and that particular show apart in my mind and my heart as kind of like my soul musical.
I really loved the article you wrote
about how arts education helps you navigate the complexities of brilliant stuff. I mean, whatever. I'm just so impressed at how eloquent you are and how you describe this stuff. It's
Thank
really,
you.
not everybody does, but I'm you're writing at a level of like someone who's older than myself, in my opinion. Maybe the age is not a part of that, but you've got a lot of you understand a lot of things that people don't, is all I'm saying.
Well, I think, I only write about things I know about. I don't write about things I have no idea what I'm talking about.
So I kind of want to just get there's few points I wrote here in that article. We can just I like to say my performing arts education gifted me access to a world not designed for me and taught me how to become the best version of myself. What do you think it is about you or or that I mean that really that art and theater just was you realized was your home early on?
I think the difference was, I was very lucky. I had like a small, mighty group of friends at school, but people also made fun of me a lot. And I
I'm
never
sorry.
felt like I totally fit in at school. And I remember my first day in the kids' musical theater program, and this was a group of maybe like 30 kids ages like 6 to 16, and I was 9 or 10, so I was right in the middle. And I remember like crying in the car on my way home, and my mom was like, what is wrong? Are you okay? Did you have a good experience? And I was like, I had a great experience. I can't wait to go back. I don't know why I'm crying. And I think the difference was, if I was weird at school, then people avoided me. If I was weird in a theater class, and even weird by theater people standards, it was like, okay, that's
Yeah.
Ashley. That's cool. That's
That's
fine.
really, I love that. That's really cool. What is it about the expression you feel like, or the form of like, you can't, like, I think about improv a lot, and you can't half-ass improv, and you can't half-ass musical theater. You have to do it fully or not. It doesn't work if you do it half-ass. So, what is it
Right.
on the expression, on the performance? What is it? I don't know. What is it that kind of got to you? And I'm wondering if there's particular songs or actresses that, like, just spoke to your soul in some of the songs you've loved in musical theater.
I can't speak for everybody, but I do feel like
For
a
you.
common thread for autistic people is that theater is a safe place to try stuff and process feelings that you're not comfortable with and don't feel safe in the real world. Because you can access those feelings in your character. And then you can put them down and
Right.
you can come back to it later and be like, okay, I kind of understand this part of my life a little bit better now. And I've had this conversation with someone I went to middle school with who now works in special ed and has
Nice.
used social scripts. And she was like, what kind of social scripts would be useful? And I was like, who says you need to use social scripts? Bring in a play. Bring in 12 Angry Men or something. They're old
Yeah.
enough to understand it. And then they can experiment with these responses and these reactions, but it's not them. It's a character. So they don't feel like they have to do the right thing as themselves. The script is
Gotcha.
right there, and the character is right there, and they get to think as somebody else, and that'll help them kind of connect the dots between their intuition and their intellect when it comes to empathizing with other people.
Wow, I
Because,
love that.
another big stereotype is about autistic people is that we don't have empathy,
Right,
but
or
it's not really
emotions.
true. It's just
No.
gonna manifest in different ways that are not as intuitive to us. And getting to work in character as opposed to on your own in real life with all the pressure surrounding it gives you more of a perspective and more of a distance that will then teach you how to read other people better.
It's very well put. Thank you so much for sharing that. I want to skip a little bit into you said that performance art and practice taught me how to balance self-discipline with self-care. I feel like being in the arts, I don't know how many shows you're all doing a week, but it's probably a lot.
It's eight.
I'm wondering just, yeah, I want to hear more about how you've kind of taken care of yourself through all this stuff.
It helps that I have a very close by apartment.
Okay.
It helps that what I always say is it helps that this is, right now my full-time job.
Gotcha.
When I was doing community theater, I was working just as hard, but then I had to get up at 4 o'clock and go sling espresso at Starbucks in order to
Yeah.
pay some of my bills. And I was living with my parents. And it just makes me realize that Actors Equity Association puts all those breaks in place and has all of those salary minimums for very good reasons, because we're not getting paid for the hours that we spend in the theater doing the show. We're getting paid for the maintenance work we do outside of the theater so that we can perform 8 shows a week at a very high level.
Gotcha. Curious on what you've learned of anything from the source material. Not necessarily tied to your character, but just more overall. I mean, I'm just curious on your overall understanding of, you can get into Jessica if you want, into the person, or just really more about this, what you got from, what was your take on watching the documentary? And maybe you didn't, I don't know. I'm just wondering if you
No,
had any connection to.
I watched the documentary after I got the part in the
Okay,
reading.
good. Yeah.
I was considering watching it beforehand, but I decided not to because I was not diagnosed until I was in college, and I
Okay.
didn't grow up in any kind of autism-specific therapy environment. Like, that was not an experience I related to. And I kind of realized I had an idea in my head about like the types of people who had those experiences, and I didn't really like that. So I was like, let me just unpack my internalized ableism elsewhere and, not let any of that interfere with my instincts about this character based on the material that's on the page. Let me just
Okay.
do what feels right and natural to me. But then when I did watch the documentary and I did see the real Jessica, I was really impressed with how vulnerable she was willing to be in
Yeah.
on a very public level in ways
Yeah.
that I never could have dreamed of doing. I
Interesting.
just and like she knew what she was doing. She, these people were very well informed about what this process was and what it meant to like be on, it's not like they just take these people without their permission or consent or understanding. They knew what they were doing and it was focused on their perspectives. And Jessica was just very open and very vulnerable, but also very confident in her vulnerability and very funny. She had a great sense of humor
Yeah, agreed.
and I just remember feeling like she was kind of an iteration of myself that I had never really allowed myself to be. And
Interesting.
that's what really stuck with me and kind of made me dedicated to building a character that, isn't going to be an exact replica of that, but keeps those elements intact in a way
Yeah.
that is going to resonate with audiences.
Yeah. Do you know how much, did they have to get permission for you all to talk to represent them
Yes.
as the musical character, and everybody was pretty cool with that?
Yeah, no, long before the show was cast, Rebecca and Jacob had long conversations with Dr. Amigo and with the participants, and they talked extensively about the documentary, what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it, and kind of discussed the process of crafting a musical from the source material in that particular way. And, it was kind of understood that we weren't gonna be imitating them. It wasn't like a
Right.
biopic where you want to cast
Right,
somebody
right.
who's exactly like that person.
Yeah.
And just talk to them about, kind of what their boundaries were, what they were comfortable with, and what they wanted to see, and also understand that not all of it was gonna be like in their control. So I think they did a really great job in
Yeah.
communicating that. And that's something that we got from the participants that we met. and from the real Dr. Amigo, who we had pretty extensive conversations with, all of us, especially when we were in Syracuse, because a lot of the documentary participants and other people at the center had questions for us as well about, you know, this whole process. Because a lot of them, you know, we're not theater people and, you know, we're not versed in this industry. And we're very curious about what this was like and specifically what it was like as autistic people.
Yeah.
That was a very long answer.
No, that's a great answer. But, you know, what was so impressive is like casting it that way, because it would have been insulting to do it otherwise. And I love how much thought went into the whole process. What I want to get to here now is, I don't know, I've been involved with musical theater for years, and it's always been problematic when, like, you got a 13-year-old Tevye, right, talking about the heart, you know, the pain in their back. Like, what is it like playing a character that's close to you in certain ways? What was that like? What is it like to play a character that's also autistic? Was there, you know, I'm curious if it was healing. I'm curious if it was harder in some ways. Like, what is it like when you're playing someone around your own age that you're able to probably use more of yourself? I don't know if that's true or not, but I would assume.
It's hard to really draw like a solid line anymore, because it's not like I'm playing autism differently or playing autism at all. It's just, no,
right.
I am autistic.
That's not what I meant, but I hear you.
I am autistic, and this character is autistic, and no matter what choices I make, I'm still autistic. And it's going to be a representation of that. And honestly, I don't think it's all that different from other roles, except the fact that this is a role that I created. I'm not following a type. I genuinely believe, and we've all discussed this multiple times, if anybody other than the seven of us had been cast in these roles, it would be a completely different show.
Gotcha.
And we were entrusted with kind of filling in the blanks of who these characters are, who they are to each other, what their humor is. Because in the very first reading, a lot of our dialogue was just like word for word from the documentary.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
And where Rebecca took it, Rebecca Gurmilosik took it after that, was more based on us and her conversations with us and getting to know us and hang out with us.
I like documentaries because there's a truth in them. There's realness. Mm-hmm. So I love what I call the documentary musicals, which are like Chorus Line, because it comes from people's stories. I don't know if you're familiar with the Me Nobody Knows at all.
Yes, I did that show in high school.
Oh my God, that's something I have on my list to put on. But again, it was taken from kids writing at a public school in the 70s. And this feels as close to those musicals because it's so based on a documentary and it's reality. I guess I'm going to go back a second to what we talked about in a second ago, is how did you feel in those spaces? What did you bring to the table with this? What were you able to give to this character that you feel like, you know, what did you bring to this character? I guess I could put that. How did you fill in the blanks, so to speak?
Just thinking back on the conversations I had with Rebecca over the years and Jacob, and the way they were so open to our perspectives as to what drives these characters in the context of the story we are trying to tell. Because the story we're trying to tell is a dramatized version. You know, it's not what happened exactly in the documentary. It's based on it, but other stuff happens too. And I think it was really important to them to give the autistic characters more obvious agency in the outcome of the situation. And it just sort of grew organically from there.
Okay.
But I remember saying to Rebecca, I think Caroline and Jessica are very heavily defined in the show by their relationship with each other and what it's about, and the boundaries that they set, and the boundaries they see each other sets, which might not be so healthy. I think it was really important to just establish who we were to each other, because that's how you define a character. It's not like you're creating a character in a vacuum.
Right,
especially in an ensemble show.
Right.
A lot of a lot of people were kind of critical of the musical in that they thought it focused too much on Dr. Amigo's character and life, and they really wanted to center it more on the artistic stories. And I get that from an advocacy standpoint, but
Gotcha.
from a dramaturgical standpoint, it is important that people understand who Dr. Amigo is and who he is to us and who we are to each other because of him, because all of those things are connected. And we, at the end of the day, we have to have a reason to care about him so that the audience can understand why we forgive him for this giant screw up. And, it's important to not paint him as a savior, of course, but it's also not important to paint him as a villain. I mean, his name is Dr. Amigo. Like, how are you going to paint him as a villain? That's a challenge of ensemble musicals. Because the thing is, when Hal Prince was going to direct, he did want to make Dr. Amigo and his family life kind of the A story and the protagonist. And that was a much more, traditional approach. And it's not like that would be a bad story to tell, but we already have 80,000 pieces of media where the disabled characters are the plot points to the abled protagonist. And they decided to do the harder thing and make it about all of us. And I think ultimately, if this were a TV series, we could get into the nitty-gritty of Amigo's storyline and get into the nitty-gritty of every individual person's storyline. But, for a 2-hour musical, you need to, we're a 2-hour musical that includes that many people. What's important is establishing their relationships to each other, because otherwise it's just
Of
people talking
course.
in a vacuum and nobody wants to see that.
Well, I'm just curious on if you're okay sharing any stories or any moments that were really meaningful to you in this process, if that's
Oh,
okay.
so many. The one thing that always sticks out to me from the Syracuse experience specifically, but even like in the grand scheme of things, was the sits probe we did for Syracuse. Because a lot of us had been living with a lot of these songs for quite a while, and a lot of them were written kind of based on us and our conversations. And
Interesting.
to hear the musicians with the orchestrations and our voices all in the same room, all at the same time, for the first time ever was a really
Wow.
moving and powerful experience. And it felt very, very, very special. And I always think of Jacob Yandura. I remember even in the workshop, like, or in the first reading, every time he heard us doing his music for the first time, his entire face, and this was 2021, so we were all still wearing masks, but you could see, like, even behind the mask, his entire being just radiated gratitude and joy. And just seeing,
That's so nice to hear.
getting to watch other people see their ideas come to life is so inspiring.
Yeah. And I mean, I got to talk to Desmond and Sammy, and Sammy is a genius in all these things. And you could tell that you were just in such good hands with Sammy. So I think we're good. Is there anything else you want to express in terms of this process? I mean, what it's like, maybe, I don't know, just anything you want to share? What's it like to step out on a Broadway stage for the first time in your life?
It's exactly as wonderful as you would think. But it's particularly wonderful and particularly special because it was this show
Yeah, of course.
and this group of people and this wonderful work environment. And I think if there's anything that I really want our show to leave as a legacy, it's what a healthy and rewarding theater making work environment is supposed to look like and can look like. And it is possible. And if we can do it, then it can happen again.
I really want to thank Ashley Wolf for speaking to us. Such a pleasure. Please, 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 the show runs until February 11th in New York City. please look online on how to get tickets and please see this show. I beg of you. It is something special. It is beautiful. I've just fallen in love with the show and being part of that world. It's really rare that anybody, any organization takes the time to really think about disability in a way that makes everybody feel at home and safe and welcome. And that is the joy of part of this, of the production. Without that, I don't think you would get, you know, really happy people performing if they didn't feel safe. And it's really nice. And soundtrack's available on Spotify. Check it out. Enjoy. Until next time. Thank you.
We thought indifferent.